Welcome to the post-game plan, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Welcome. This is the career development hub for all NBA players, both current and former, where we get an opportunity to feature some of our great talent in the NBA fraternity. And today we have a special guest with us. His name is John Wallace. He was picked 18th overall by the New York Knicks in the 1996 draft. He's also a graduate of Syracuse University. He's played seven seasons in the NBA, and he's actually been a part of a couple of movies, and he's the current VP and director of development for Winning Because I've Tried, Winning Because I Tried, and is a big advocate of literacy, and is working on a number of initiatives, both in Toronto as well as in Rochester, New York. We're very delighted to have him on board. John, how are you doing today?
Hey, what's up, man? Everything's good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. John Wallace. So tell me a little bit about, I know you spent seven seasons in the NBA. You completed your degree in 1996 at Syracuse. Is that right?
Yeah.
What did you complete your degree in?
Sociology.
Sociology. And, I mean, you entered the league in 96, so you obviously had your degree at that time. Now, how do you think that degree, like, played into your time in the game? And, you know, do you think it gave you any advantages in terms of the way you communicated with different individuals, maybe the way you networked?
Well, what it did was, like I told, you know, I have an AAU program also, so I send a lot of kids to college. And I tell them, you know, obviously college is the best 4 years of your life, but you just can't go up there and just be partying and stuff. You got to network, because some of those guys that you're hanging out with are going to be CEOs or have major jobs somewhere, and they might be able to get you a job. So it's all about networking and never burning bridges and just treating people the right way at all.
Absolutely. Now, so when you entered the league in 96, you know, were you thinking about life after basketball, or was, you know, obviously, you know, being an NBA player, your number one priority is obviously keeping your condition up, exercising well, eating well, and performing. But did you consider, like, life after the game, and at what point did you consider it?
Well, initially, obviously, I didn't. I was just young and, you know, just enjoying life, so to speak. But fortunately for myself, I was on a team full of veterans when I was with the Knicks. So guys like Charles Oakley, Patrick Ewing, Allen Houston, Larry Johnson, John Starks, like those guys, and Herb Williams, they pulled me aside and just broke down everything for me. Basically gave me the blueprint to how I should lead my life and how I should be in the NBA.
Really?
They made it so much easier for me. You know, when you're on a team full of veterans who are all, like, the consummate pros, they teach you, and if you're willing to learn, they'll teach you exactly, you know, the ropes, so to speak.
Okay. Now, what are some of those, I guess, key points of wisdom that you think that you took out of, I guess, their experiences as veterans and as individuals that had been in the league for over 10 years?
Well, first thing is Oakley told me, you know, if you're going to do any business, wait till your sixth or seventh year in the league, let your money accumulate a little bit, you know, so if the business doesn't happen to work out or whatever, you still have money to fall back on. And he also told me, you know, to take care of your own bills monthly, you know, like, a lot of people get scammed in the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, whatever, because you're letting other people handle your finances all the time. So, you know, you got people telling you how much money you got instead of the other way around. So, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, a couple of things I took from Oakley. Herb Williams' big thing was just always, you know, being ready, knowing all the plays, you know, whether you're going to play or not, just always being ready. So when the coach calls your name, you know, you're able to perform at a high level, you know. So those are like the three main things I took from those guys.
I really like what you just said in terms of what Oakley gave you, and he mentioned a couple of things. Get involved in a business 6 or 7 years later, accumulate some money, and you know, you may not necessarily, you kind of want to know what you have before you walk into it, understand the game, understand all the, I guess his main idea was that, you know, understand your life here and then apply the money to whatever business later on.
Absolutely.
Okay. And be responsible for your own finances. Obviously, like you kind of mentioned, there's a lot of opportunities for individuals to suggest that they can manage your own money, but the only way you're going to know about your own possibilities are if you have full control of what's going in and out of your account.
Absolutely, man.
Okay. So, I mean, you played seven seasons. Now, at what point did you start thinking about life after basketball?
Probably between the summer, between my third and fourth year, that's when I got my new contract and all that stuff.
Okay.
You know, I had a revelation, like, you know, this one day this is all going to be over, so I better start preparing myself.
Okay. Now, you also had an opportunity to be a part of two movies, is that right?
Yeah.
And how did you, like, I guess, did someone approach you, or did you kind of work your way?
Spike Lee basically opened up the auditions to all the Knicks players, and that's why myself and Walter McCarty got the parts, because we went in red form. We auditioned.
That's awesome.
We actually auditioned, got the part, and, you know, and then I did another movie with him, Bamboozle, so we did He Got Game and Bamboozle. And it was a great, great, wonderful experience.
That's great. I mean, He Got Game is probably one of my favorite basketball movies of all time, and I'm so happy to hear that you were a part of that. Now, tell me a little.
The best.
Sorry,
the reason why that movie is, like, to me, the best basketball movie is because the footage in there is real.
Exactly. Yeah.
We were just playing ball, and he just kept the tape running for 2 weeks of us just playing pickup ball. And then he just, you know, obviously edited and cut it down from there. But that's just real. That's just real basketball right there.
So when you were on set, you were probably mingling with a lot of, you know, individuals from different industries. Now, were you able to network at that point with different people? Obviously, Spike Lee is one of those individuals. But people from Hollywood.
Absolutely, man. Like, I am Mr. Network. You know.
Okay.
My thing is, you know, I talk to people, then, you know, I either give them a business card or I take one of theirs, and then I stay in contact.
Okay. Now, what do you think are the key points for any young, I guess, young current player in the league or even a retired player? Like, what do you think are the key points for networking? I mean, how does someone that may or may not have that strong confidence, I mean, coming into the league, I speak to a lot of players that don't necessarily have that confidence to go up to speak to somebody in a different industry. What could you suggest for those types of players?
You have to have the confidence, first of all. And second of all, you got to realize, like, you're not going to be on that platform forever. So while you're there, whatever, you got to make the most of it and figure out a way to really keep yourself relevant. And, you know, that's the key right there, is just keeping yourself relevant. You know, because, you know, you play, when your playing days are over, the people aren't as quick to pick up the phone when you call. People aren't as quick to, you know, do whatever you need them to do all the time. And then, so you just got to stay relevant and stay humble, and things will work out.
Okay. Now, what industries were you interested in when you started, I guess, networking and looking at different opportunities?
Well, the first thing I got involved in was the music game. I put out a CD.
Okay.
I could have produced a CD in 2002. And then from there, I just started branching out and trying a whole bunch of different things, you know. And I was able to surround myself with some pretty good business guys. And we started doing some good things.
Okay. Now, what are some of those projects that you kind of worked on or tapped into or even tried and tested?
Well, I got involved in investing in oil back in '99 when it was like $29 a barrel. I worked on a couple of literacy campaigns, and as of recently, I've been doing a lot of charity stuff, which I wish I would have started doing earlier, but. You know, some guys that you invest with, you know, or you do business with, they insist that you do charity, and it's a beautiful thing. So one of my boys, you know, he's like, if you want to do business with me, we got to give some to charity. So I've been doing on this charity kick lately, and it's a great feeling to know that you're helping people out.
That's fantastic. Now, why do you think that balance is so important?
Well, because I'm a big believer in karma, and you just can't be out here just, you know, for yourself all the time. At some point, you got to be a little bit of a philanthropist and, you know that there's a greater feeling than just, you know, self-aggrandizement. You know, you want to be able to pass on and help people out who aren't as fortunate or whatever.
Okay. Now, can you tell me a little bit about, so obviously you alluded to literacy and that being something that was kind of close to your heart. Now, I know you're involved in a couple of projects right now. One of the programs that you're involved with and you're the vice president as well as the director of development for is Winning Because I Tried. When did you get involved with Winning Because I Tried and what's your role there?
It's been about 2 years, and one of my really good friends, Modi Cox, he came up with the idea. He presented it to me, and I told him, you know, I'm on board, and I'll do anything to help. And since then, we've done hundreds of seminars with hundreds of thousands of kids, and we just recently got up into the Toronto area 2 weeks ago, and it's really had a great feedback from it. And we're going to be up there in a lot more in Toronto in the very near future.
That's fantastic. Now, what are some of the seminars cover in terms of the content?
Well, it goes over, you know, basically the Winning Because I Tried thing, basically saying, you know, as long as you're trying to win at life, then you will win. And don't let life's pitfalls and valleys deter you because everyone goes through them. And, you know, you just got to be strong and persevere. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's the truth.
Absolutely. And I mean, people...
We touch on some bullying stuff and some of the seminars. You know, depending on the audience, sometimes we tweak the seminar a little bit, but it pretty much covers, you know, just keep your head up, persevering. We touch on the bullying thing, you know, how crazy that is and how, you know, if you're being bullied, to contact someone, and if you are bullying people, you should stop it like right now because it just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, now tell me a little bit.
You know, other.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to know in terms of the. You did get a community service award while you were in Toronto, and you got the Man of the Year award, and it was dedicated to your dedication, actually, to the youth in Toronto. Now, did this kind of stem from that in terms of your interest in literacy?
Yeah, well, Ollie, with that whole literacy project, once again, I jumped on board and I was going to help him campaign about it because when he told me the numbers, I was, you know, 42 or 48% of adults in Toronto are illiterate or close to it. And,
wow.
And in upstate New York, it's like 52% of adults are illiterate. So it's like alarming because if they're illiterate, then how are they able to help their kids?
Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, so it's a major thing. It's a major problem, and we got to fix it.
Now, can you tell me a little bit? You're a coach of an AAU team in Rochester, New York. Is that right?
Yeah, Upstate Elite.
Upstate Elite. Now, tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the, as a former NBA player, I mean, you've had numerous experiences. I know you played in Europe for a little bit. So you have a global view of the world as well as an idea of what a professional athlete kind of endures. Tell me a little bit about the, I guess, tidbits of information you give your guys, the players that play with you.
Well, first of all, they just don't realize what hard work is. No kid does. These kids today, they go to practice or they work on their game for 2 hours and they sit on their ass playing video games and texting on their phone for 8 hours. And, you know, when I was coming up, it was the exact opposite. You worked on your game for at least 10 hours or so. You sat around watching TV for about an hour until you passed out because you're so tired. The work ethic in the kids today is just not the same. They got to get back to that. They got to get back to the fundamentals. They got to get back to just, you know, just putting on your hard hat and just working hard and earning everything you get.
And, I mean, the percentages of individuals that make it to the league is not that high. I mean, if you think about it, they're only 80 or so.
Well, it's very low.
Very low, yeah.
you're more likely to be a brain surgeon than to be an NBA player.
Exactly.
It's very low, but, you know, some people live in a jaded world, and, you know, they shoot themselves in the foot, so to speak, before they even make it. And you just got to fill yourself with some humility and always work hard and work at your craft. That's the only way you're going to make it in anything, not just basketball, but in life.
Absolutely. Do you encourage your players to look at opportunities outside the game as well as prepare for, you know, prepare in terms of networking, in terms of leadership skills and all these types of things?
Yeah, that's why, like I said, I tell all my guys, you know, it's all about networking when you're in college, not just about partying and having a good time, because that's a given, you're in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to network? Who's going to make sure you stay in contact with that kid who one day is going to own a company or, you know, one day he's going to work for a great company that he can get you a job at that company, you know, and you just never know what's going to happen. So, you know, you just got to always be able to have your networking hat on. That's what I tell them. Like, everyone's a potential to help you out.
Okay.
So you got to help yourself out.
How do you, I mean, I think that this is a pretty, you know, a little bit of a deep and diving question, but I mean, for individuals that are not familiar with, you know, building that confidence or even networking, how does one go about doing that? Is that a part of kind of mastering your craft and then having the confidence to say, I have a platform to speak on? Is that one way you could do it?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. But it's just a willingness to, you know, want to further your horizon, so to speak. Like, you just don't want to shut down any avenues. You want to leave everything open. As long as you're doing that, you know, you have potential to always start new things and be a part of things on the ground floor. I mean, you know, some people that are part of these big companies that are big today, the people that are starting on the ground floor, you know, they really made off well, you know, because of their position, you know, whatever, whether they're the friend of the person who started the company or they had input or money or whatever. So you just want to be one of those people that's kind of on the ground floor of a company, so to speak, and then, you know, you can reap the benefits.
Absolutely. Now, are you involved in any businesses right now, aside from Winning Because I Tried?
Yeah, I mean, I'm involved in I need all day to tell you everything I'm involved in, but,
okay.
You know, Winning Because I Tried is at the forefront right now because it's something very near and dear to my heart. In my AAU program, which takes up a lot of my time with the traveling with the kids and stuff during the summer.
Okay. Well, man, I really appreciate your time. I mean, at the end of each show, we have this kind of pay it forward moment where, you know, you get an opportunity to kind of speak to some of the current players that are out there in the NBA as well as professional leagues abroad. As well as the former players that, you know, some of which are not doing, you know, just as well and are struggling with understanding how to network, understanding how to build that confidence and, transitioning from the game to the life. And, you know, I'd love to hear, you know, some of the things that you'd have to say to those individuals and, you know,
well, what I would tell the young guys, man, is don't just surround yourselves with your friends and your boys and family and all that stuff, man, which is all good, and I did the same thing. But at some point, you got to make that transition and start surrounding yourselves with people who has as much money as you have or more, because that's how you're going to do business. And if anybody needs help, they can call me. I've got a lot of big-time hedge fund guys in New York City, I know, Boston, a lot of private equity guys who have their money makes NBA money looks like it's non-existent, you know.
Right.
And you got to surround yourself with these type of guys for business, you know, for business purposes.
Okay.
And learn how to basically help them help you, because they probably have better business acumen than you have at this time because you're an athlete. You're just like you're a better athlete than them. They're probably a better businessman because they achieve the same status monetarily as you do the business world. So you should take heed to that, respect it, and learn from it, and then try to partner up with them.
when do you think young guys should start thinking about something like this? Right away or, you know,
immediately? I mean, you can never start thinking about this too early.
Okay.
You know, that's the key. You start thinking about it too late, it's already too late, it's over. You know, you missed the boat.
Okay.
It's like this should be, I think it should be part of a college class for guys who are potential pro athletes or whatever. I think they should have to take a class on money management because it's just, you know, it's tough as a young man to just be thrown into this world with this money and, you know, not really knowing how to use it, save it, whatever, you know, what have you.
Now, do you suggest investing in a business more so than investing in investment opportunities or the other way around? Or do you have any preference or do you just think someone should just do their due diligence and figure out the best opportunity?
Well, you always have to do your own due diligence. That's another thing I learned. Do your own due diligence. And then from that, what I like to do is I have a couple of business guys who I trust and I bounce everything off them. You know, so I'll get 3 or 4 opinions on a particular project or something. And, you know, between those 3 or 4 guys that I'll tell about, you know, I'll get a great assessment as to what I should do.
Okay. And I guess partnership opportunities are probably best as opposed to going in into something alone because you have someone vested as well?
Yeah, well, and then also, like I said, you want to be invested with someone who has as much money as you or more. And they're investing money just like you, not just sweat equity.
Not just sweat equity. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, as an NBA player, you get a lot of individuals that are suggesting that they could run their business, they could run your business for you, but you'd have to pay up front the money. So it's best to have somebody that's going in 50-50 with you, that's someone that's also just equally as invested.
At least 50-50. Or I'll do the sweat equity you put in the cash. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
You know, if someone's not willing to put up on the cash with you, then I wouldn't do the deal.
Okay. Great advice. John, I really want to thank you for taking your time. Any other comments you think that are important for the current players or even for some of the former players?
No, man, all I got to do is say to the city of Toronto, I'm about to be back up there in a major way for the youth up there. And look out for me.
That's what's up, City of Toronto. So thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Vice President, Director of Development for Winning Because I Tried. Real advocate of literacy in Toronto as well as in New York. And I'd really like to appreciate...
You're going to be changing that title soon. I'll be the President of Winning Because I Tried.
Okay, that's fantastic, man. President of Winning Because I Tried. I really appreciate your time, John Wallace.
All right, Allie. Talk to you later, man.
Talk to you later. Thank you very much.